It's now 9:15 a.m. Central Time, Thursday, July 30th, 2020. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting is now in order. Kelly, do you want to talk about a little bit of housekeeping about how people ought to mute themselves, or are you muted? You got everybody handled there?
Yes, everyone was muted upon entry. And so please just remain muted unless speaking.
Okay, great. Thanks for being here today at our I think it's our third or fourth virtual meeting, and you know, we're getting pretty good at this. I want to just start out by thanking our port employees for all their hard work and making sure that we continue to operate efficiently and to make sure that we're doing the people's work and bringing cargo in and sending cargo out. The frontline workers at Barber's Cut, Bayport, and our other docks, our police, our firemen, and our frontline workers are going out there every day and making sure that the port operates. And I want to really thank them for their hard work. Our staff, our behind the scenes folks, our staff who are mostly working remotely, are doing a great job and making sure that we're incredibly efficient, and even though we're not in our executive office building. And I think sometimes the behind the scenes folks need a pat on the back and a call out too, because you know, when you think about it, our frontline employees are doing a great job, but without our behind the scenes folks making sure that payroll gets done, that HR functions get done, that workers are paid, that all of our critical departments that continue to operate are just, I don't think we have a department that's not critical. And so I think that it's really important to call out our people working from remotely, because you know, it's not that easy to work remotely and it's not that easy to be efficient. And I really appreciate everything that every single person is doing to continue the business of the port. We know it's so important for our region, especially in this time, this very strange time that we're in with the pandemic. I think that one of the things that I want to highlight today, I'm going to keep these comments pretty brief. Yesterday, we had a major win in Project 11. The House of Representatives passed its version of the WERDA bill. It passed by a voice vote with no amendments. It's really great news for Port Houston. Contains the authorization for the Houston Ship Channel Expansion Project. The bill also contains language intended to help ensure that the federal government assumes the year-to-year maintenance dredging after the project is complete, particularly for those components that Port Houston is building with our own resources. Our project authorization is also pending in the Senate, WERDA, but that bill has not passed the full Senate yet. We think that's probably going to happen after the August recess. We are really pleased with this development and it continues to put our project on the path for federal approval. Again, we couldn't have accomplished this without the hard work and leadership of our congressional delegation, the support of and advocacy of the private industry. I especially want to thank Lizzie Fletcher, who sits on and Brian Babin, who both sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. And also Senator Cornyn and Senator Cruz, who are advocating big time in the Senate, you know, for the deepening and widening project. I also want to thank our Project Team 11 for their advocacy and their moving forward on the design of the project with the Corps of Engineers. We had a lot of major advocacy going on during the last month since our last meeting. We had meetings with many people on the Hill, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Chairman, obviously Speaker of the House, and then Chairman Peter DeFazio, who is the Chairman of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, that is so important to making sure that our project gets moved forward. Another big ticket item, which is a big money item for Harris County, and this is another great news story. Last week, our finance team priced a bond refunding transaction valued at almost $250 million, which essentially replaces debt issued at higher interest costs. with a lower interest coupon. That refunding on net present value is expected to generate savings of nearly $100 million for the taxpayers of Harris County. And I really would like to recognize Roland Gonzalez, our Director of Treasury Services, and his full team for their hard work and efforts on behalf of our stakeholders. You know, when you have an opportunity to lower the cost for the taxpayers on bonds that were issued a while back, this low interest rate environment has really been really good for refinancing bonds like this. And I appreciate our team that got this done. With that said, I will my remarks are finished, and I will move to item C on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes. And what we're going to do is what we have in the past when we vote on things. We're going to get a motion and a second, and then I'm going to ask for any nay votes. And if there are nay votes, we will see what happens. So right now, I need a motion to approve the minutes for the June 23rd.
I'll move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any nays? Hearing none, the motion passed. We have today, Roger, you're up for the staff reports.
Yes, thanks, Chairman and Commissioners, and good morning to all of our guests virtually again. Look forward to seeing everybody in person whenever that may be. I'd like to highlight just a few things through the second quarter and for the month of June. Some of our operating results, again, the June was down in our container volume about 16% versus June of 2019. So that trend kind of continues the same for the last two or three months. But in spite of the COVID-19 and the double-digit decrease for the last three or four months, our container volume through the second quarter on the back of a very strong start to the year is at 1.4 million TEUs through June, which is only a 2% decrease over the same period last year. Just to kind of quantify that and put that in perspective, we're actually 9% ahead of where we were in 2018. So, you know, the growth was there, very strong growth, and we're comparing it to a solid year in 2019. So this is about as expected. There's some potentially good news out there. Some of the blank sailings, the canceled sailings that we've seen seem to be decreasing in August. And there are likely to be some extra loaders over the next month or two to handle some of this peak season cargo that we get in our Trans-Pacific trade. We're even seeing a little bit uptick in the gate volumes at our container terminals. Very, very strong in the last couple of weeks over what they were for the last two or three months. In fact, we had two record days at Barber's Cut just this past week. Over 4,000 transactions at that terminal. So I think it's important to recognize this. I'm not going to say we're back, but there are some bright spots that we're hopeful that will continue. And I think July is probably going to reflect some of these. The numbers in July are going to reflect these. General cargo and break bulk, on the other hand, is still being negatively affected by several factors. It's primarily the softened energy sector, the drilling, and perhaps some trade policy and COVID-19. As an example, we've handled 1.3 million tons through the first two quarters of the year, which is down 45% still from last year. Put that in perspective, we average about 3 million tons a year average over the last couple of decades. So, it continues to be down. You add all that together, the total tonnage through the port and our public facilities through the first half of the year is 20.8 million tons, which is about 5% in aggregate over last year, 5% less. Curtis and his team went through the financial results yesterday in the audit committee. I'll just highlight, the operating revenues based upon these volumes that we're seeing through our terminals. Our revenue is $187 million through the second quarter, down 8%. Cash flow, about $80 million, down 9%. And our capital awards so far year to date are $81 million. We continue to plan and invest on future projects for when you know, for the right time when we need them. And, you know, we're preparing for recovery from this global pandemic. And, you know, we're here at Port Houston, we're in this for the long game. So we're going to be prepared for the recovery. Just a side note, kind of piggybacking on the WERDA and the Project 11 and the progress that we're making there. You know, our team keeps hitting these milestones toward the success of Project 11. Now, it may not be as newsworthy as getting a chief's report or a WERDA bill passed, but there are some critical milestones that keep us moving forward toward digging dirt. And what I mean by that is we got an executed design agreement yesterday, and it's not really an agreement to design per se. We've been designing the project, but it's agreement how we're going to pay the Corps to have these design reviews. And without this, the Corps can't proceed, and our project can't stay on track. So it's just another step in that our teams continue to make. And toward the successful completion and acceptance of Project 11. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and I'm real proud of that. The last thing, I want to piggyback a little bit on what Rick said about our employees. We can't say it enough. You know, the success of the Port through this pandemic has been on the backs of many. Our customers' freight continues to move because not only the men and women that are working here at the port, the ILA, the truckers, the pilots, the stevedores, and all of the other people in our industry are showing up every day to keep that commerce flowing through our region. And for the second time, we did it earlier in the summer, and we did it again because it is needed and necessary. We've awarded what we call ready pay for the men and women working for Port Houston who've consistently come onto our site every day and did their job. And it's a lump sum amount in recognition for their appreciation for this steadfast service that they're doing through this crisis. But I also, as Rick mentioned, appreciate it's not easy telecommuting. And I want people to understand that as well. And on the backs of those people who are keeping the support that we need to keep our operations going at Port Houston. I'm very proud to be a part of their team. And I see Captain Smith's picture on there. We appreciate the Coast Guard too, Captain, and what you guys are continue to do through this pandemic. So that's all I have. And I'll leave that. If you have any questions, Commission, just ask away.
Commissioners, you have any questions of Roger? Hey, Roger, I think it would be good for you to send out just a one pager with the stats that compare where we are now in 2020 versus where we were in 2019. We get a lot of, I know the commissioners get a lot of questions about that, you know, just in the community when they're out, you know, talking to folks, or at least maybe they're doing it virtually for sure. But with that said, would you send out a one pager that kind of hits those highlights?
Yeah, we can do that. I think we can frame that a little bit better than what we put out in our monthly report, but yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, the monthly report just has so much detail, just to kind of fact sheet what's happening in the pandemic kind of thing, and just a one pager with bullets, not a lot of verbiage. That way, everybody can keep it in their head, and when somebody asks them a question, they can give the Reader's Digest version.
We got okay. That. Yep.
Great. Thank you. Any commissioners have any comments?
Yeah. I'd like to ask Roger, Mr. Chairman, said we had a record gate movement last week. What was those numbers?
Well, we had at Barber's Cut, you know, our combined, let me just put in perspective what we're seeing. You know, for the last two or three months, we've been averaging about between Barber's Cut and Bayport, about 8,200 gate moves a day. You know, last couple of weeks combined, we've been seeing about, you know, over 9,000 moves per day. So that's significant.
That is.
The record is at Barber's Cut, which that alone had 4,000 over 4,000 moves at Barber's Cut for a couple of days running at that facility itself. So, okay. You know, again, things are, you know, there's some bright spots out there.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions, commissioners? Okay, well, I will move then. If there's none, we'll move to the our next section, which is E, and we're going to have some appearances here. Before I introduce Captain Jason Smith, who's the sector commander for the Houston-Galveston area, I want to use this opportunity to clarify who does what, so you know how important our next speaker is. A lot of confusion about what the Port of Houston and the Port Authority does, and I've been saying this in all the kind of speech or conversation I have with anyone around the port and has interest in the port. So the Port Authority does two things, and two things only. First, it operates the public docks. We know that's Bayport and Barber's Cut and six or seven other docks with where Breakbulk comes in. And that's number one. And number two, we're the non-federal sponsor of the channel, working with the Corps of Engineers. The Houston Ship Channel is a federal waterway, is controlled by the federal government, and the Corps of Engineers, anything that has to get done in and around the Port of Houston is a federal project managed and controlled by the Corps of Engineers and with support of the Port of Houston. When you talk about operating the port, when you talk about closure with any kind of a vessel issue or ingress egress issue, Captain Jason Smith is the captain of the port, and he is the guy that closes the port, opens the port, and deals with any major issue that's going on with the port. So the Port Authority gets a lot of calls when there are issues and things like that, and they think that we actually have authority, we do not. And I'm going to introduce you to the man who has the authority, who controls the Port of Houston as a captain of the port, and that is Captain Jason Smith. So, Captain, welcome. I'm meeting you virtually, and I would love to meet you in person at some point. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay?
Perfect.
Great. Perfect. And thank you for that kind introduction. Mr. Chairman, commissioners, it's certainly a pleasure to have an opportunity to introduce myself and get a chance to know you, albeit virtually. I look forward to the opportunity where I can come to one of your meetings and engage with each of you over the next 3 years of my tour here. Certainly was a very kind introduction. I don't do any of that without the team of close to 1,000 people that work with us here in Sector Houston-Galveston, and certainly can't do any of that without the partnerships that we have throughout the port. And that includes, and I would say at the top of that list, is the Port of Houston Authority. I did want to give a quick introduction to who I am and just talk about some of my short-term objectives. First and foremost, I'm a mariner by trade. I am a graduate of a Maritime Academy up in Maine, and I've spent 24 years in the Coast Guard since graduation in the Coast Guard and working within the maritime safety arena. So not new to this world of work. And in addition to that, I have been fortunate to be in the state of Texas for the last 6 years and look forward to another 3 years here in Houston. Backing up from 24 years ago, I graduated from Maine Maritime Academy. I spent tours training as a marine inspector, waterways manager, marine investigator on the East Coast and on the West Coast. I was in Seattle and Portland, Oregon. I was in Boston and spent some time at Coast Guard headquarters. Also overseas, I was in Coast Guard activities in Rotterdam, where we inspected U.S. vessels overseas. So got a lot of good experience to see operations, not only on the East Coast and on the West Coast, but overseas as well. So my career was really lacking one critical component of the maritime industry, particularly in the United States, and that's the Gulf Coast. So 6 years ago, they sent me to Port Arthur. I worked predominantly in the liquefied gas industry at the National Center of Expertise for Gas Ships. Spent 3 years there, and then my last 3 years was down in Corpus Christi, where we were responsible for the South Texas coastline, essentially from Matagorda Bay all the way down to Brownsville. And then just about 2 months ago, took command as sector commander for Sector Houston-Galveston. Certainly any command is a highlight of a Coast Guard officer's career, and I would argue that any other sector in the Coast Guard is only second to Sector Houston-Galveston. Certainly the largest port in the country, and the amount of activity is bar none to any other port. In addition to that is the partnerships. So here I am. I definitely look forward to working with all of you. From a short-term objective standpoint, I've already heard everyone talking about over the last 4 months, but even here on this call, the importance of COVID-19 and the measures that we put in place to make sure our personnel and our community is safe. That's at the forefront of our mind as well, and certainly has impacted our operations. But I hope that you'll see that we've got to a state and we've been able to engineer and process out what we see as the greatest risks in our environment, so that our personnel can be back to work at a operational level that can support the maritime industry. In addition to that, and kind of compounding the challenges with COVID-19, is the hurricane season that we're in, of course, and it's not new to anybody in the Gulf Coast. And over the last week, we've had our first threat and successfully dodged that one. But it really gave us the opportunity to prepare for the hurricane season, and I'm certainly grateful for that. Those two risks are really our short-term concerns at this point. Certainly, over the course of the next 3 years, I look forward to working with the Port of Houston Authority to ensure that our waters are safe, they are secure, and they're clean. Really, our three key goals in engaging with the maritime community, and we can't do that without the Port of Houston Authority. So definitely, commissioners, Mr. Chairman, look forward to working with you and everyone on your staff. Already had a chance to meet with Captain Woodring, and then also look forward to working with Mr. Gunther and everyone else at the Port of Houston. I'll stand by for any questions that you might have for me.
Mr. Chairman, a comment I'd like to make.
Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Captain. I'm Dean Corey. I'm with Seafarers International Union. And as a fellow mariner, I would just like to extend my gratitude to the Coast Guard, the way you've worked with us during this pandemic. You've streamlined your requirements at the RACs as well as the National Maritime Center. You made it easier for us to dispatch members out to U.S. flag vessels. And you've been out there protecting the health and safety of our members. I really appreciate it. Welcome to Houston. We look forward to working with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kirby. Just as a response to that, I mean, I certainly only took over 2 months ago. A lot of that groundwork was laid by Captain Oda and his staff as well. So I'm just riding in the coattails of him. But that's certainly at the forefront of our mind, and really making sure the mariners out there have a means to get off the vessels, what they need to do, crew transfers, as well as just for normal mental health. I mean, we have mariners. We heard a report of a mariner that was getting off that had some health conditions. He's been on board for 15 months. I mean, that's just very unfortunate, and it's certainly at the forefront of our mind as well.
A lot of members have been out there for a long time just to doing the job, because we got to keep the cargo moving, and we appreciate the job you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Other commissioners? Okay, great. Well, Captain Smith, thank you so much for being here today, and we appreciate everything you do every day and your team of 1,000 people. So we're ready to stand by and help you in any way you need. You just pick up the phone. Okay.
Thank you again for the support.
Thanks. All right. Our speaker is Roland Garcia, who is one of the new pilot commissioners, and Roland is leading the transition for the new pilot commission. So, Roland, are you ready to go? Kelly, do we have Roland on me? Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chairman Campo, and good morning, commissioners. As Rick said, I'm the chairman of the new Board of Pilot Commissioners Transition Committee, and I'm here to give a short report on some of our activity, our work up to now and going forward. I won't go into all the history of the creation of the new pilot board. I think you're all painfully aware of all that. But we, our task is to create this new Board of Pilot Commissioners, new government agency from scratch. That's a big task, as y'all know. With the legislation, there was no, it provided no staff, no office, no computers, no equipment, no insurance, no banking, no funding. Pretty much we had to start from scratch. And so I'm here to report that we're working hard, we're being diligent. We've got a really good group of pilot commissioners. They're very dedicated to the mission. We're making really good progress. It does take time. We need to be very compliant on what we're doing in terms of notices and meetings. And we've designed some RFPs for our executive director position, office space, administration, an investigator, general counsel, all the things that you know we will need. We're now have issued RFPs for that. That took time to design those. And then we got to get the responses back. We need to shortlist the vendors, make selections, maybe do office site visits on office space, things of that nature. And then we need to do the transfer and handoff. And you know, that takes time, the setup, any beta testing, whatever we do before we go live, all the while being compliant. And then, of course, COVID came along in the last 3 or 4 months, and it slowed us down since we couldn't do any in-person meetings, as you all know. So we're getting close. We're working hard. You all were kind enough to extend our interlocal agreement through September. I'm of the belief it's going to take longer than that, and we'll see. Hopefully not, but likely so. And so I may need to come back to give another report and ask for you can hang with us a little while so we can get this done and get it done right. We want to get it done right. But I think we're making very good progress. So I want to thank you all for your support and just wanted to give you this brief report on kind of where we are and see if you have any questions. So thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Roland. Commissioners, any questions for Roland? And as I said last time in our meeting when we extended the interlocal agreement to the end of September, I think the new pilot commission is working hard. It is complicated when you can't have in-person meetings and have direct contact with people, obviously. But hopefully we'll they'll get to their point by the end of September to be finished, and we'll look forward to your update at the next meeting, Roland. So thank you. Any other commissioners questions? Okay, so our next speaker is Bridget Murray, Bridget lives in Pleasantville and is a member of our Community Advisory Council. So Bridget, are you ready to go?
Yes. Are you able to hear me?
We can hear you fine. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Campo and commissioners. I appreciate this opportunity to address you all on two particular topics for your agenda today. The first is on item G2 regarding approval of a 5-year lease for the Kinder Morgan Petco site at Sims Bayou. Really, I have some questions for clarity because I'm not familiar with this particular site, but I have seen the operations at one other facility managed by Kinder Morgan at Beltway 8 East and the Ship Channel. This location as well is by a body of water. It is my understanding that during past floods in the region, it is likely that Petco pollution entered the Buffalo Bayou. So as a landlord, are there any contractual requirements or expectations for Kinder Morgan and other lessees to provide protective measures like a good neighbor agreement, especially when we recognize that Petco is a carcinogen?
So Roger, do you wanna hit that? I mean, we clearly have in leases, the compliance with all environmental laws and and those issues are definitely outlined in the leases. Roger, do you want to comment on that?
I had a hard time finding the mute button. Yes, this is the we do. You had mentioned it in our leases to ensure that, you know, whatever compliance our tenants need with the regulations that they have, you know, this is a renewal of a lease, and you know, something that you know, that we regularly check the stormwater runoff and you know, the facilities, particularly this one that's been under lease for a while. So yeah, there are those provisions in our lease to make sure that they're abiding by whatever laws and regulations are out there.
Okay.
And you had another issue you said, Bridget?
Yes, the other comment is on item J10 regarding your operations award related to COVID-19 testing. And just wanted to share, and this was a discussion also with the Healthy Port Communities Coalition, that any conversation related to COVID is a very personal one with me, especially since I've had family members stricken by the virus. But as an organization, we recognize not only a personal responsibility for prevention, wearing a mask, but we also applaud your corporate responsibility by providing this service to your employees and the secondary benefits to their families. So we just wanted to say thank you.
Well, we appreciate that. The discussions that we've had with all of our employees and our vendors are very basic. You know, wear a mask, wash your hands, social distance, you know, get tested when you need to get tested. And I think it is a personal responsibility of all of us that surround the port to make sure we keep ourselves safe. But at the end of the day, it's about keeping our neighbors safe as well. And so thank you for those comments. And I appreciate you being on the Community Advisory Council. We're looking forward to our next meeting. Okay, our next speaker, any questions, commissioners, of at all? Okay, if not, we'll go to our next speaker, which is Leticia Ablaza from Air Alliance. Leticia, are you ready to go?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Great. This is Leticia Ablaza with Air Alliance Houston. And I just wanted to very quickly mention that I have a couple of high schoolers in the kitchen with me while I'm doing the Zoom meetings.
Perfect.
And my son is actually a senior this year at Energy Institute High School, and they've done many projects around the port. And actually, one of his goals is to actually go to preferably A&M Galveston, and he wants to study naval engineering and possibly at one point work for the port. So I think it's a huge thing, I guess, for them to kind of hear some of them and be a part of some of the meetings that I'm a part of. So I appreciate you guys and everything that you guys do as well. I just say that to let you guys know that there's other, I guess, people listening in. But the main reason I'm wanting to chime in today is to thank you guys and appreciate the relaunching of the Port Commission Community Advisory Council and the port's focus on engaging the community in very meaningful ways. My organization, as maybe some of you guys know, we work on air quality issues. So of course, we're very interested in the upcoming release of the Clean Air Strategy Plan. And I also want to appreciate the port's response to the HPCC, Healthy Ports Community Coalition, and their willingness to discuss the environmental justice issues with us. So that's really the main point that I wanted to discuss today and just express our gratitude and look forward to continuing to work with you guys.
Well, Leticia, we really appreciate that. And to your son, we need all the help we can get. So study hard and come and see us when you're ready to get an internship or get a job, because we have lots of jobs and we need a lot of smart people.
Thank you.
He said thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Okay. And so any commissioners, any questions?
Yeah, I'd like to just welcome Leticia to the meeting, and look forward to working with you, Leticia. And we have a lot of common interest and a lot of common history. So we're going to get this done and make it a better port for everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And by the way, my daughter's here too. She said, go Buffs.
There you go. And really, your son may want to go to the maritime licensing program down there, be a sailor.
Yeah. Well, he's at Energy Institute, and my daughter is at Milby High School. So
yeah. Cool. Great. Great. You have to remember, it's all about our kids and raising our families and making sure they have jobs in the future. And that's what Port Houston is all about.
Yes.
Any other commissioners? Okay, thank you so much for your comments today. I think that is the end of our list of speakers. Is that correct, Kelly?
Yes, sir.
Anyone else? Okay, good. All right, thank you. We'll now move on to our item F in executive. So who's going to take this item, F1?
Okay,
Tom, get after it.
This is Tom Height. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Executive, there are two items. Both of them are associated with our internal audit group. The first one is our annual review of the charters of both the audit committee and the internal audit department, as well as the internal audit policies. As far as the charters, there are no changes except for the dates. And the policies have only been updated to what the international standards are for the professional practice of internal auditing. So really just tweaking words. Yesterday, the audit committee members voted to bring this as written to the full commission. The second one is just to clarify the expense reporting approval process for the chief audit executive, which will now be done by the chief legal officer. Again, the audit committee members yesterday voted to bring this change to the full commission. So staff request approval of F1 and F2.
So moved. I'll second it.
Okay, any questions or comments? If not, I'll, if there are there any nay votes? Okay, the items F1 and 2 pass. Item G, and under, let's move on to commercial. Tom, go ahead.
The commercial, I want to talk about two of them. One being the item that was previously discussed with Kinder Morgan. This is a renewal of a previous 10-year lease that they had for 14.2 acres. This one is for 5 years and 4 months. The 4 months sounds funny, but that we're trying to get all of our leases to our fiscal year, which is also the calendar year. The second one is G3, which is for authority to purchase wetland mitigation credits for our Greens Bayou terminal, previously known as Wad Chang, from a company called Third Texas Resources for $1.2 million. We had a long-term lease with a tenant who recently decided that they were not going to continue with the lease. But part of that lease was they were required to get the core permit and satisfy any related wetland mitigation requirements for that permit. They purchased about $1.5 million of the credits. So what we are asking in this one is for the commission to give us approval to buy the rest of the necessary credit, so that when we go out to market this property, we not only have the core permits, but we also have all of the credit, the wetland mitigation credits necessary for construction. So staff is requesting approval of G1 through G3.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments before I call for the nays? Okay, do I hear any nay votes? If not, the motions pass. Go ahead, Tom, for the next.
In the finance group, I'd like to talk about three of the items. The first one is approval of staff recommendation for the 2020 fiscal year audit services for $300,000. This will also, in the agreement, has 2 1-year options. So we're not asking for all 3 years, we're asking for one with 2 1-year options. This is the audit of the financial statements, P&D fund, single audits, as well as the pension and OPEB trust, which the trust actually pay for those, but the same group will do that. The second one I'd like to talk about is H3, and we are asking for the approval of the final option year with ANCO Consulting. They are our investment advisory company related to the defined benefits, defined contribution plans, as well as the OPEB plan, and that's for about $137,000. This service, since this is the final option year, we will be bidding this out the next year when the time comes. Finally, I'd like to talk about H4. We are asking the commission to adopt some amendments to the Port Authority's OPEB trust agreement. Back in 2012, the port started in a multi-employer OPEB trust to start building up funds to cover some of the liability we knew we were going to have. In 2014, we established our own irrevocable trust. We kept putting the money necessary from the actuarial determined amounts each year to try to build this up to the point that it was a solid trust that we could start using. Well, as of June 30th, the market value of that trust is $80.3 million, or about 113% of the actuarial determined OPEB liability. So it's exactly where we wanted this to end up. So what we are asking is to make some amendments to the agreement to allow us to start making the payments for retiree medical and life insurance premiums and claims, as well as fees for operating the trust, that to be paid out of the trust rather than as we are currently doing through the operating funds. The amount comes to about $183,000 a month that would come out of the trust. We will continue to fund it just like we do the defined benefits pension plan with the dollars that our actuarial tells us are required. Yesterday, the pension and benefit committee members voted to bring these changes to the full commission. So the staff is requesting approval of H1 through H4.
I move, Mr. Chairman, we adopt.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments about these items?
I have a quick question, Mr. Chairman. Tom, who is our current auditor?
Grant Thornton is our current auditor. This BKD, let me make sure I got those letters right. BKD, they recently purchased Grant Thornton's State of Texas business.
So this will not really be a change of auditor then?
The individuals, no. The company, yes.
All right, how long have we used Grant Thornton?
About 10 years. It's been bid out 2 different times. This would be the third time they had won the bid.
Okay, I tend to think that we need to change firms every 5 years or so. So are you comfortable with, are we comfortable with the same firm doing our audit 10 years in a row and now potentially 13 years in a row?
This Grant Thornton group has been very tough. We had some auditors before them that after they left and we brought Grant Thornton in, we found out some shortcomings. So we are comfortable with Grant Thornton.
Yeah, I think also when you have the the new audit firm, they have managers who they report to now. So it is like changing firms, even though it's almost like employees move from one company to the next. But there's different supervision and different, you know, sort of views from the top. And so I think it is almost like changing firms, even though you do have the same people. And it is interesting. I agree with your point to a certain extent, Commissioner, because, you know, in the non-public world that we operate in as just commercial, we do have to change. We don't change our auditors, but we change the people inside the audit group. So, for example, Camden has Deloitte & Touche, and I've had Deloitte & Touche for 27 years. But mm-hmm. every 5 years, the audit partner changes, and they interchange the supervision levels up. And so I think that in this case, we are getting a supervision change, even though we're keeping the same kind of individuals that were actually working on the job in the past few years. And the same people have not been on the job for 10 years. They do move those people in and out. So I'm not concerned about the same firm as long as they're moving the people in and out.
Okay, just wanted to, because that is I think a little unusual for a public entity to keep the same firm, but that's fine. I mean, if you are comfortable with it, then
yeah, I'm fine with it as chair of the audit committee, but as long as I see changing of the people and the supervision, then that's exactly what private companies do as well. And so I think it's best practices to make sure that we don't have the same people, even though it could be the same firm.
Okay.
Any other questions, commissioners? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do I hear any nays? Hearing none, the motions pass. Tom, next.
The next group is infrastructure. I-1 is a design of container yard 3 at Barber's Cut. Staff is asking for the recommendation is RPS infrastructure for about $978,000. I-2, staff is asking for recommendation for construction of container yard 2 south at Bayport. It's about 17, almost 18 acres of property to Satterfield and Ponticus, for about $18.75 million. I-5 is staff is recommending for French drain repair at Bayport to Jerdon Enterprise for about $941,000. I-6, a 2-year stormwater quality program management contract. This is back to the item that was questioned earlier about runoff. This is the company that we hire to go out and actually follow up on the permits that we have, which we have multiple permits, and some require testing monthly, some quarterly, some semi-annually, and some annually. So this is the company that goes out and does all of those stormwater testing for us. The next three are I-10, 11, and 12. All three of these are associated with Project 11. I-10 is, staff is asking for a recommendation that we go out and we hire a company, or in this case, a couple companies, to help us make the strategic decisions, the support we need for implementing the procurement of Project 11 construction contracts. This is a very complex, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars to do all these, upwards of 800 million. And there's going to be 9 different design packages. So we have to make sure that the dredging capacity is available, that all the core rules are followed. What are our options for procurement for this? And it's a huge project, multiple projects really. So we are asking for some help through two companies. One is Price Waterhouse and one is Ecologic. And these two companies will help us make those smart decisions up front so that we don't get into any issues on the back end of this massive project that we're doing. I-11 is to seek some additional funding for Atkins and Freeze Nichols that the commission approves some money in April. These two companies are helping us with auditing and engineering support on the design of the Houston Ship Channel. You know, we hired two companies, the JB and HDR, to design all of the phases of the channel project. And these companies are helping us stay on top of that. Well, these additional funds will take us through the 65% design phase of that, as well as doing some value engineering towards this so that we can make sure that it's not only being engineered, but we're doing it the best way possible. And finally, I-12 is the start of the process for the movement of the pipelines under the Houston Ship Channel. There are 8 pipeline companies that have 10 pipelines that need to be moved in section 4 of the channel project. By law, PHA is responsible for 1/2 of the cost to move those pipelines. So what we're asking here is to enter into a reimbursement agreement, because the companies will do most of the work in terms of where it goes, and not in the channel, but how it's done. And they could each be upwards of $1 million that would cost us. So it's about $2 million per. So this is to not exceed $10 million. We don't think it's going to be the whole $10 million because some of them aren't as complicated, but we are asking for this as a whole in terms of the project. This will also come back to you later on when it's time to actually move those pipelines, because that number will be much larger than this $10 million. These $2 amounts, the design and the movement of the pipelines, are included in the total $1 billion project that you have seen in the past. So staff requests approval of I-1 through I-23.
Commissioners, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, questions or discussion?
I have a discussion here. Is that when we move these things, Tom, are we going to be real sure that we get them low enough or far enough off of the channel that we don't have to go through this when all of a sudden we've got to do something else for the channel or widen it again? How do we prevent from continuing to pay our portion of half of this thing to move their lines that they asked permission to put in our way? So I just say we've got to pay real close attention, so we don't want to run into this every time we try to do something out there on that channel.
I'm going to ask Charlie Jenkins to answer that question.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And Commissioner Mace, you're right on spot. The agreement does provide maps of the current needs and also the projected future needs, and is designed to cover both of those. The companies don't want to have to pay to relocate either and stop service. So that issue is being addressed. And the agreement gives us the not approval, but the right to agree to what the design plan is. So we will be actively monitoring and watching that issue.
Good. I appreciate that.
Any other questions, commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I have a real quick question on number 11 on the professional engineering auditing services to Atkins and Freeze and Nichols. Tom, explain again why we're going from $350,000 to $950,000. What caused the enormous jump in that contract?
There's some when you say 350, you talk from the last, the April approval.
We approved 350 in April, I believe.
Yeah, and we've already used that portion, and it was mostly for looking at the credit issue that we're having with the Corps of Engineer for 10, Project 10. So we need to get that money back in here, and then to take us to the 65% design is $680,000. The value added is about $100,000. And the other 200 is because we're having some conversations with the Corps and a little disagreement that in our contracts with the two designers, they were going to do the review of each other. But now the Corps is starting to question that. And so we've added some money for the engineering review for that portion of it as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question too, and maybe this ain't the right time for it, but on all of these pipelines we're moving from the Barber's Cut in, is that where the majority of them are into the turning basin?
Yeah, I believe it's the majority of it is in section 4, but Charlie, isn't there one out in the bay?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tom. Yes, there is one out in the bay, but it's not part of this relocation agreement. That is an abandoned pipeline that has to be removed. Future evaluations for segments 5 and 6 up at the turning basin will occur at a later time when the Corps starts that design. This covers pipeline, known pipeline relocations in segment 1 through 4.
But mostly 4.
Yes, sir.
Mostly 4. So that's in from Barber's Cut in.
Correct. Should I go to? So staff recommends approval of I-1 through I-23. I don't know if we did that. Stop. Is the chairman still on?
I guess I was. I kept asking for the nay votes, but I was muted. Sorry. So we no other discussions. Do I hear any nay votes? Hearing none, the items pass. Tom, take us through the next one.
So in operations, there's quite a few purchases of equipment that we are asking for approval of. I'll run through these pretty quickly. One is a loaded container handling machine at Barber's Cut for right about $600,000. One is a forklift at Barber's Cut for about $270,000. A sweeper at Barber's Cut for about $265,000. A man lift at Barber's Cut for about $200,000. A mobile column lift at the turning basin, and I had asked what that was. It's to work on vehicles. That's about $72,000. And my favorite of all the purchases is the replacement of a 1958 bulldozer at the turning basin for $170,000. So I think we got our money's worth out of that one.
Come on, Tom, you don't think our mechanics can't get that going another year or two?
I asked them that. They told me no, they couldn't do it. All of these pieces of equipment are directly related to our operations and are used on almost a daily basis for the continuation of the cargo movements that we have. The second item I'd like to talk about is the one that was previously brought up, is the additional funding we are asking the commission to approve for temperature screening with a company called Workplace Safety, and the terminal cleaning with Ambassador Services. The workplace safety about $400,000 and the cleaning $450,000. This will take us through September to to do these two services we're doing at all of our terminals. And to give you an idea, to date, we have spent about $2.6 million on COVID-19 things. And when I say that, I mean, we spent about $1.2 million on temperature screening. We spent about $800,000 on cleaning the terminals and about $600,000 on supplies. So staff requests approval of J1 through J12.
So move. I do have one comment on.
Go ahead.
On section on number one, we didn't take the low bid, but we didn't take the low bid because all of our equipment is of the type that we accepted the bid on, and we're able to trade parts, and it makes sense to jump the bid. I agree totally with it. I'm the one that's always raising so much heck about it, but this is a good move on our part. All our people know how to work on it. We've been using these machines for 12, 13 years. I think it would be a tragedy to start changing at this point in time and causing problems. With that, I'm okay.
And another reason was the delivery time for Taylor was 12 weeks. The delivery time for the other vendor was 36 weeks.
And Commissioner Mace, just to add to that, you know, it's something we look at on every one of the, you know, we're looking at the life cycle cost, the parts. You know, you can get a cheap machine, but the parts aren't available and you have to get them from overseas. But appreciate your recognition of that. But we're looking at the total life cycle cost to maintain those machines as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question.
Okay.
I know we spent a whole lot of money trying to keep the work area safe so everyone feels comfortable with going to work. You've done a hell of a good job. But let me ask you, is there any government funding that the port authorities may recoup some of this money, or is it not worth asking?
Yeah, well, Clyde, I can answer that. Chairman, if I may, there's been a recent request by port authorities, you know, for any type of funding like that to be recovered due to the you know, a lot of ports, quite frankly, have done worse than we have as financially or whatever, but there is a request out there for inclusion in any upcoming bill to be able to recoup some of those costs.
Okay.
And we're also tracking all of this to submit a FEMA claim.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, do I hear any nays? Hearing none, these items pass. Next up.
Now we're going to go to technology. There are no people or PSEF items, so we're going to M. M1 is approve the staff's recommendation for a 5-year contract for CNC managed services with Managed Force for $551,000. Again, that's a 5-year, so it's over a little over 100 each year. CNC, configurable network computing. This is basically the JDE, which is our ERP software architecture and methodology. So environment changes, monitoring application patches, securities, things like that. Second one I'd like to talk about is M2. It's to seek approval to purchase the IT network hardware, software as part of our replacement program for unsupported and outdated network hardware. Normally we do this 1 year at a time, but 2020 with the COVID has kind of pushed everything back. The timing is really slow to get anything. So we are asking for 2021 right now, so that it's taking us between 4 and 6 months to get normal stuff. So, you know, we're looking only at replacing end of life items, which usually in the IT world, most of the stuff is 5 years for us. And the last item I'd like to talk about is to approve the purchase of data storage maintenance renewal with a company called NWN. This is the storage that we have for our Navis system, which runs the container terminals and Shareport. And it's for both of our sites, both at Bayport and our offsite at DRS. All of the items in the technology group have been and are part of our IT master plan. So staff is requesting approval of M1 through M5.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any questions or discussion? Okay, any nay votes? Hearing none, the motions pass. Okay, so we're now to our executive session. So Kelly, would you describe how we're gonna do that to commissioners so you know how to do it? Eric?
Hang on, Rick, Kelly Day has already gone to the executive session meeting. I think all of the commissioners have been invited, so we can drop out of this one and go to the other one and then come back and rejoin afterwards.
Okay, great. Let's do that. Brandon
Kelly Green, is that correct?
So how do we do not the X out?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Yes, sir.
All right.
That's correct.
Let me read the announcement in the public. Yeah, I'm going to read the announcement in the public meeting, and then we'll go to the executive session. It's now 10:21. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority will now convene a closed meeting as permitted in the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys.
Okay.
Deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Turning Basin, Barber's Cut Terminal, Beltway 8 vicinity properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public employees, and security-related matters. Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
11:03 Central Time. The meeting is now formally reopened for the Commission. We have someone who signed up, but we kind of missed him, I guess, which is Reverend James Caldwell, who's the founder of the Coalition of Community Organizations. Reverend Caldwell, are you on the line now?
We in the community relations meeting.
Chairman, I'm going to unmute our call-in users. He may be one of them.
Okay. So Reverend Caldwell. Have Reverend Caldwell unmuted if you are.
Which meeting were you in?
No, you should be. You're in the proper meeting. This is the Port Commission meeting.
Yeah, Commissioner Meese, this is going to go into the community meeting as soon as this is adjourned.
Right. I'm waiting for this one to be adjourned.
Okay. And Commissioner and Reverend Caldwell had emailed the wrong email address, so that's what happened. But I don't hear from him yet.
Have somebody call him? We have his phone number here.
I did call him, and he was going to be calling in. So, you know, I guess we could wait a minute or so more here.
Okay, we'll wait a minute or two. Everybody's unmuted at this point, Erica, correct? Or Kelly?
Yes, sir.
Reverend Caldwell? Well.
Doesn't sound like we have Reverend. I'll tell you what, let's, we don't have anything else on our agenda at this point. The only discussion that I wanted to have, and we'll do this at this point and still waiting on Reverend Caldwell.
Pardon me, I believe he may have just joined us. I see a new call-in user. Reverend Caldwell, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay, Reverend Colwell, well, sorry that we didn't get you on the first pass, but you are on right now. I've introduced you as the director and founder of the Coalition of Community Organizations, so you have the floor.
Thank you so much. And then once again, I want to apologize. I took the initiative of trying to actually sign up, and I put the Port of Houston instead of the Port Houston.
No worries.
Nevertheless, I want to thank the Chairman Campo and the rest of the commission for an opportunity to speak this morning. And I wanted to really just respond to the letter that we received, that the Health Support Commission received, to appreciate Roger Gunther's response to our comments made by our members at the last fourth meeting in June. And it has also been discussed, the Chairman Campo's discussion on the need for social and economic justice, you know, for Portside communities last month, helps to elevate these important issues. And as my colleagues earlier spoke, Ms. Murray and Ms. Alblaza, we look forward, actually, to a more in-depth conversation with the port in regard to strategies to strengthen our communities, to protect our public health, and to ensure opportunities for all. And once again, I say I just want to thank Chairman Campo, rest of the board, Mr. Gunther as well, for responding to our request, our letter, and having the opportunity to speak before the board to address our issues and our concerns.
Great. Well, we appreciate your response back. And, you know, this is a two-way street. We know that, you know, it's very important for our commission and for our port employees to reach out to the community. We're getting ready to start our community relations committee and our development committee. And we do appreciate your comments and look forward to working with you on these very, very important issues of social justice and racial equality and how all that relates to the port and the communities around the port. So thank you very much. Any commissioners have any questions or comments?
No, this is Commissioner Clune. Reverend Caldwell, thank you. And I just also want to reiterate, you know, after that meeting, I had a call with Mr. Shelley and immediately talked to Roger. And I just want to commend Roger and his staff because, you know, he was very eager to learn about the conversation, how the port could do more. And so I just want to commend Roger and his staff because it was a day or two to turn around that letter and for us to have that discussion. So thank you, Roger, and all.
Same here as well. My congratulations and appreciation of Mr. Gunther, Mr. Campo, and the rest of the Port Commission. And we certainly do appreciate the opportunity to have the advisory council from the community as a part of being a former member. It's important and that dialogue continues.
Commissioners, comments or questions? Okay, well, thank you, Reverend Caldwell. We appreciate you being here today. Then moving on to our agenda, our open meeting is finished. We are now on P1. The next actual meeting we have scheduled is on September 29th, 2020. We have been discussing, and we may need an August meeting. I think generally speaking, the August meetings, we haven't had an August meeting in since I've been on the commission, primarily because most people are vacationing in the summer. It's hard to get people organized. With virtual meetings, a different story. And also a lot of folks are not vacationing in the summer. So we may schedule an August meeting if staff believes that they need the meeting. And so I just want to, you know, give you a heads up on that. And at this point, I'll take any other final comments or questions or discussions of any of the commissioners? Okay, hearing none, we'll adjourn the Port Commission meeting at 11. So we're done then.